but very few of us know them. They took an oath to protect us at home and abroad, so the rest of us can live safe and free. They are the men and women of our military and first responder communities, and these are their stories. American Warrior Radio is on the air.
Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to American Warrior Radio. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. Irish poet Oscar Wilde said that life imitates art far more than art imitates life. Moving pictures were just beginning to break into commercial relevance 5 years before Wilde's death, but I don't doubt that he would have considered film a perfect example of what his original quote was meant to communicate. Film and television have had a great impact upon our culture, and sometimes art and life intersect in some very unique ways. Older listeners may remember the television series Mission Impossible, which aired from 1966 to 1973. One of the key plot lines was the use of a full head mask disguise. At a critical point in the episode, an agent would peel off the mask to reveal their true identity. The bad guys were always fooled. Cool trick, but it was just television. Regular American Warrior Radio listeners may recall our interview with Jonah Mendez. Her informal CIA title was Master of Disguise. She described how the CIA worked with Hollywood experts to design, produce, and field a real-life Mission Impossible mask. It could be hidden in your armpit and applied in 5 seconds with no other assistance. It was so good that Jonah auditioned the mask sitting just a few feet away from President George H.W. Bush in the Oval Office. She did a Mission Impossible reveal, completely fooling the man who himself was the former director of the Central Intelligence Agency. On today's show, we're going to discuss a similar intersection between film and real life, perhaps not quite so dramatic as a full-face mask, but just as practical. Joining us today to tell that story is the commander of the Air Force OSI Detachment 217 at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, Lieutenant Colonel John J. Hoffman. Lieutenant Colonel, welcome to American Warrior Radio.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So Ben, my producer knows Ben gets lots of at least one dumb question every show. So I never understood, when it comes to a lieutenant colonel, do I address you as lieutenant colonel? Can I just say colonel? Is that going to get me in trouble? Or should I just call you a special agent?
Well, in OSI circles, we generally will stick with the special agent. So you could go with that.
So let's talk about that real quick, because I find that very interesting. Your discipline is one where, I don't want to say you don't wear rank, but because of the nature of what you do, it's important probably for folks not to know what your rank is. And explain why that is the case.
That's correct to some extent. The working agents, the ones that are doing the interviews and interacting with victims and subjects, can either be an enlisted agent, an officer agent, or a civilian agent. And as you can imagine, if you were, let's say, interviewing a subject who was an airman and you were a captain, there might be some implied coercion in that interview. And likewise, if the subject perhaps was a colonel and you were a staff sergeant, the subject then might have some leverage over the agent. So in order to function as investigators, we mask our rank. Now, once you reach the senior levels of the enlisted corps, the chief master sergeant, and then the field grade officer level for officers, then our rank starts coming back out. So for me here at Davis-Monthan, serving as a commander, obviously I'm not going to be operational doing interviews, so I wear my uniform and I display my rank.
Now, you check two boxes in the American Warrior Radio pantheon of guests. You're also a law enforcement officer. You're the patrol supervisor, I think is the right title. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm a patrol supervisor with the Sheriff's Department in Wisconsin, and then I'm a Air Force reservist and serve as an officer in OSI as a reservist.
Okay, now, I want you to say it. Tell me the name of the county in Wisconsin, because I just want to hear it.
So the county is Outagamie County.
Okay.
And the county seat is Appleton, Wisconsin.
Well, I was joking with you before the show. I love talking to folks that have been deployed, because I love saying Djibouti on the air. And I often refer to Sheboygan, because that just sounds good. But now I'm going to say
Outagamie.
Outagamie. Okay, that's fun. So what is it when you... So you were commissioned as an officer through Officer Candidate School in 2003, correct?
Correct, yeah.
And, at that point, were you already in law enforcement, or did that decision come a little bit later in your career?
No, I was in law enforcement. So I started with the Sheriff's Department in 1998.
Okay.
And in 2002, 2003 timeframe, there was an opportunity for me to possibly fly C-130s. So that's what I was initially pursuing when I went into the Air Force. I've always been interested in aviation. Pilot was the original dream. But in the early 90s, when I was graduating from high school and stuff, it was tough. The job market was very tough. And flight instructors and people that I had known who had all their ratings were actually leaving to go become insurance salesmen and things like that. So at the time, being a pilot in the early 90s wasn't really going to work out. So that's when I pursued law enforcement. And a little side note on that and kind of what drove me there was my father was in a bad car accident my senior year of high school. And he basically was dead at the scene. And there was a police officer in Appleton who actually revived him and brought him back and gave us, at least as a family, the opportunity to have that closure and be able to still have some time with him before he passed in 94. So that's where I was. I was doing law enforcement, but then this opportunity kind of came up. They were looking for pilots in the early 2000s. I was able, or I was fortunate enough to get a slot with the 440th in Milwaukee to fly C-130s, and that's why I came into the Air Force in 03.
Now, originally, if I understand this correctly, sir, you were in logistics, which, you know, bread and bullets, which is pretty darn important as well. What interested you in making that transition from logistics into OSI?
Yep. So the pilot thing didn't turn out because after OTS, I went for my last physical and they said that I had a red-green color deficiency that would prevent me from having a medical in the military. So I came back and I became a logistics officer. I worked in the Aerial Port Squadron, the 34th Aerial Port Squadron in Milwaukee. And what kind of forced my transition to OSI at the time was the 2005 BRAC. So the 440th was slotted to be moved down to North Carolina. And as a law enforcement officer, the job isn't necessarily portable, right? Everything's based on seniority, how long you've been there. Each state has its own standards in terms of what qualifies you to be an officer. So it's not like I could just pick up and go to North Carolina. And then likewise, it wasn't going to be cost effective to go to North Carolina 1 week in a month, you know. So that's when I started looking for other options, and that's where OSI came in.
And for our civilian listeners, BRAC is the base realignment and closure.
Correct.
So that shut down, although there's several rounds of it. I know Davis Monthan was actually on that list early on.
But, sure.
When we come back, I want to explain to folks a little bit more about OSI. It's interesting, and maybe this explains the whole thing in one statement, sir, but my brother was an OSI agent for many years, and I don't know anything about it because he still doesn't talk about it. So when we come back, we'll talk about that. And then also this very interesting, intriguing little training session that you dreamed up. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. Stick around. We'll be right back. This is Ben Bueller Garcia, host of American Warrior Radio. If you're Medicare eligible and military connected, Rich Lewis and Medicare Mentors will guide you through setting up coverage and making sure you have the right options. You don't have to navigate the Medicare maze alone. Call Medicare Mentors now for your free consultation and free service. Call 719-886-3377. That's 719-886-3377. Medicare Mentors, personal guidance, no-cost consultation, proud sponsors of American Warrior Radio, Saturdays at noon on KPPF, Colorado Springs.
Life is full of bittersweet transitions. It's difficult to know how these changes will impact us over time. For some people, difficult transitions like retirement, divorce, or loss of a loved one can hit harder than expected and may contribute to feelings of hopelessness or even thoughts of suicide. The risk of suicide is even higher for men over 50 who served our country. Guys like me. That's why support from friends and family makes such a big difference. Every day, your actions could help save a life. Together, we got this. Learn how you can help save a life at veteranscrisisline.net.
I didn't want to talk. She just sat with me. That was all I really needed.
We got back. One day, he called me out of the blue. And it's comforting to know that I always can count on him to have my back.
She called me from time to time. I really didn't think I needed any help.
It took me from being really depressed to feeling like somebody cared to give me some hope. Just that one text.
Be there. Your call. Your presence. Your words. Your support. Be there and help save a life. Learn more about preventing suicide at VeteransCrisisLine.net.
Flag season is coming up. Like me, you want to fly the best flag to show your pride. That's why our house proudly flies a flag from Allegiance Flag Supply. American flags should be made in America, and Allegiance uses only the highest quality U.S. source materials sewn right here in the USA. Order your new flag for Memorial Day, Flag Day, and 4th of July today by visiting showallegiance.com. Use discount code AmericanWarrior at checkout for a 10% discount. The gold standard of flags for serious patriots. It's what we fly. Show Allegiance.
Powerful talk.
I like to talk about one thing that may be difficult about deployments, breaking the news to kids.
Powerful talk.
So, what is stress? How does stress affect us?
Powerful talk.
I think it's really important for us to ensure that the whole story is told and understand, you know, everyone's place in that historical context.
Knowledge is power. Get yours on KPPN.
Welcome back to American Warrior Radio. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're talking with Lieutenant Colonel John J. Hoffman about OSI in general and also a very cool kind of art meets life training program that he initiated. Before we get into that, though, Colonel, Lieutenant Colonel, Special Agent John. I'm not going to get that. I've got three segments. I'll get it right eventually. But before we do that, the OSI, you, and I think it's important. I know it's important for people to hear this because I'm also a volunteer with the Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve. And many civilians out there, I believe, are still stuck in this many ages ago idea that if you're a reservist, you get to go to San Diego and goof off for 1 month during the summer. And then you maybe do some stuff, you know, 1 week in a month, and you're not a real airman or a real soldier. And I use the air quotes there. And the story I always tell people, sir, is the famous Marcus Luttrell rescue, the lone survivor that made the movie and the book. That was a reserve crew, a reserve pararescue crew that made that tremendous rescue. So just to clarify, you are a reservist and you just, from looking at your bio, sir, you kind of hop around the country and just sort of fill in when you're needed. Explain to us how that works.
Okay, and that's correct. I am a reservist. So everybody's also kind of thinks of reserves as being, right, 1 week in a month, 2 weeks a year. That's a traditional reservist. OSI reservists are actually IMAs, or individual military augmentees. So we're reservists that are actually assigned to active duty units. And basically the program is designed that, for instance, like for me as an IMA to a commander, that if the commander, the active duty commander, deploys forward, that the IMA would then come to backfill at the unit level, at the base level here. Because, right, the mission is going to continue here at Davis-Monthan even though the active duty commander is deployed. So that's why you look at my biography or my resume, you see that I've been a detachment commander 5 times and have kind of jumped around the country. But that's where the needs are, and when I have the opportunity to serve, I raise my hand and I go do that.
Well, and I do it very well. 4 times you were named the Office of Special Investigations Individual Mobilization Augmentee Officer of the Year.
A few
that's
times.
Not bad. Well, four times.
Four times.
Five. How many times? Well, it's your resume. You tell me, sir. How many times? A lot.
A lot.
Still impressive. Now, if you were active duty and you had been a detachment commander 5 times, would that be a bad thing? I mean,
I don't think it would be bad, but I think that the normal career progression might have an officer do 2, maybe 3 max, just because of how they advance and how their careers are designed to for them to grow into the higher levels, right? There's a region level headquarters above the detachment, and then above that is the OSI headquarters level. So officers are constantly growing through the system. Whereas a reservist, I'm also kind of expected to do much of the same, but the opportunities for me to serve are generally going to be at this field level. So that's why I have so many times that I've done it. Plus, this is the best place to be. This is where the people are and the work is, and the, you know, where the relationships and your ability to liaison and work with people really pays off.
Do you find it advantageous that you also, in your day job, your civilian career, you're also law enforcement?
Absolutely.
I mean, there's got to be a lot that transfers back and forth, right?
There sure is. I mean, criminal investigation is a criminal investigation. So the same investigative steps or the way you would think about a case that we would apply in the civilian world applies in OSI.
So let's educate folks a little bit about OSI here. Other than being maybe one of the units that no one in the Air Force actually wants to hear from, because that's generally probably going to be a bad day, explain to our listeners what OSI is and what your mission, your broad mission is.
So really you can think of our mission in three parts. But on the baseline, OSI is responsible for basically your felony level investigations for the Air Force. And those investigations kind of take three different veins. There's criminal investigations, sexual assault, murder, if there's murders, if there was a bank robbery on base, kind of things that you'd associate as felony level crimes. We also are responsible for all the fraud investigations for the Air Force. So if you have major contracts, major manufacturing or programs, things like that, where there things might not be on the up and up, and OSI is responsible for investigating that. And then finally, the third prong is really counterintelligence and basically countering the activities of our adversaries that are trying to gather intel on the Air Force and our mission.
Most bases or posts have a mutual assistance agreement with the local municipal. So, for example, the fire department. If something goes on and the base fire department needs some help, the municipal units are, have an agreement to come in and help out with that. Is there the equivalent for you with local or other federal law enforcement agencies when it comes to OSI, or can they not cross that portal onto the base without your permission?
Well, they actually can, and the permission actually is from the defenders, security forces. But there is a mutual aid agreement. And also, each base has a different type of jurisdiction. So the type of jurisdiction that we have here, the U.S. government or the Air Force is a property owner, and we actually have TPD that comes on base and actually responds to calls on base. There are those agreements, and then there really has to be a good partnership with whatever local agency you're working with, because our airmen live out in the community, and so they may be victims of crime or they may commit crimes that are outside the wire, the fence of the base, that we need to still investigate, and that's where liaison and partnership with our local agencies comes into play.
And that might be another case where your dual hatedness comes in, because I mean you are a civilian law enforcement officer, so you get it. You understand that the maybe sometimes the sensitivities or the different mindset. So we should look into giving him a raise. Yeah,
no, so, that's absolutely true. There's been many instances where I've been able to play that card essentially, and that kind of sometimes breaks down barriers, because sometimes there's the feds are here,
right?
And the locals, right? Being a local, right? That's not. You don't want the feds in your business or in your county or in your jurisdiction. So sometimes there's like these barriers that exist. And being able to speak their language and say like, hey, I'm one of you, in a few months I'll go back to my civilian job and I'll be just like you. And that does kind of break down that barrier.
So if I'm a U.S. Marshal or a postal inspector or an FBI agent, basically my jurisdiction is pretty much anywhere I am. I'm carrying a gun and a badge. Would that technically apply to OSI agents as well?
It does. Our jurisdiction, though, really is tied to the UCMJ. So it basically is worldwide, global. Wherever a military member is, they're subject to the Uniform Code of Military Justice, and we can investigate those crimes under the code. So our jurisdiction essentially is global to protect the Air Force. So
because we'll be talking film here, in one of the Jack Reacher movies, there's a scene where I guess it's the Army equivalent of your office, rolls up to arrest the corrupt sheriff in a diner somewhere in the middle of nowhere. And I'm sure that's 100% accurate.
Oh, I'm certain, yeah.
But are there cases where you're cooperating off the base with agencies and you, I guess maybe like an FBI task force, you and your agents are brought in to help conclude the investigation or wrap things up, or is that pretty unusual?
I'm not going to say it's unusual. We do have agents that serve on task force. We have an agent that's assigned to the Joint Terrorism Task Force here in Tucson. But a lot of times what will happen is the civilian agency will run their investigation, and then we will run a concurrent investigation to essentially document the incident for the Air Force. A lot of times this is in cases like a death investigation or a suicide that happened off base, and the locals have the jurisdiction, the primary jurisdiction over that. But the Air Force still has interests and still has to answer questions for families and Congress and these different entities in there. And that's why we have a requirement to investigate also. So there are instances where we're in kind of joint task forces, but sometimes we're just working concurrently. And that's where the relationships that you build at the local level come into play.
So who owns the crime scene? It's pretty obvious if something happens on an Air Force base, that's your jurisdiction. But if a military member outside the base does something in a knuckleheaded way, do you then own that crime scene, or does it start with the local law enforcement, or a little bit of both, or to be determined?
Yeah, it really starts with the local jurisdiction.
Okay.
And even like I said, on base where it's a proprietary jurisdiction, I believe, TPD has the initial jurisdiction.
Okay.
Because the Air Force is really just the property owner. Like, you're the property owner at your home, and your local law enforcement responds there first.
So I noticed also on your resume, and I think this speaks more to the global reach, you were deployed at least twice, as I understand it, once to Iraq and once to Afghanistan. And your role there at that time, was it investigative or was it security or a little bit of both?
So actually, I've deployed three times.
Okay.
The first time was as a logistics officer in 2006, my first trip to Afghanistan. The two times I've deployed for OSI, I actually filled roles that are in a more specialized realm. So in 2010, I was a security advisor, which really translates into bodyguard for General Renez, a two-star general who was the top Air Force commander in the theater, and served as his bodyguard for that deployment. And then my last deployment to Afghanistan, I served as the deputy theater counterintelligence coordination authority. And so basically myself and then the director were responsible for coordinating all the counterintelligence in the Afghanistan theater. And what that really means is just being the focal point to help take care of any conflicts that might come up between even, you know, let's say FBI counterintelligence and Army counterintelligence, or Special Forces Unit counterintelligence and OSI, or to just make sure everybody's playing well together and we're all on the same track or on the same mission set, so that we can meet the needs of the theater commander.
The reason I bring that up, the only thing I know about OSI is because my brother also served in that capacity many years ago. And I know one of his, and it's interesting, he doesn't talk about it, which is appropriate. But I know he was involved in Desert Storm, and I believe he was on, he did security for General Schwarzkopf. And then I know several years ago I was visiting him, and there was a Bronze Star in his shadow box. And of course, I get excited. I was like, John, holy cow, Bronze Star, tell me about this. And he said, was never there and never happened. And I thought he was just sort of yanking my chain, so I started pushing him more. I was like, well, you know, come on the show, let's talk about it. He's like, no, really, it never happened. And to this day, that was 15 years ago, and to this day, he still can't talk about it. So on occasion, you and your agents are involved in that kind of stuff, I'm guessing, that some you'll just never be able to tell anybody about. And I guess if you were there, you know it, and if you weren't, too bad, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's a... much of what we do, especially in the counterintelligence realm, is going to fall into that category, where it's not something we can be freely going around and talking about it. All of our agents have top secret clearances, and depending on what program you're part of or what facet of OSI you're working in, all of your work may be classified and you may never be able to talk about it.
Dang, I wish I wasn't old and fat. I'd sign up right now. I don't think the Air Force would have me. Ladies and gentlemen, this is your host, Ben Buehler-Garcia. When we come back, we'll talk about what we've teasing you about. A lieutenant colonel here came up with a very unique idea involving Hollywood to train his agents and several other folks involved in this kind of stuff with the Air Force. Great story. You're going to want to hear it. Stick around.
standing at attention for our veterans, first responders, teachers, doctors, and nurses. We salute you for all you do.
I just want to thank you for doing what you're doing.
KPPF, the power of community.
Opportunities present themselves every day. Opportunities that move us forward. Opportunities to serve part-time in your community while continuing their full-time careers or education to help keep our nation safe at home and around the globe. Explore your opportunities in the Air Force Reserve.
This is Ben Bueller Garcia, host of American Warrior Radio. If you're Medicare eligible and military connected, Rich Lewis and Medicare Mentors will guide you through setting up coverage and making sure you have the right options. You don't have to navigate the Medicare maze alone. Call Medicare Mentors now for your free consultation and free service. Call 719-886-3377. That's 719-886-3377. Medicare Mentors, personal guidance, no-cost consultation, proud sponsors of American Warrior Radio, Saturdays at noon on KPPF, Colorado Springs.
I didn't want to talk. She just sat with me. That was all I really needed.
We got back. One day he called me out of the blue, and it's comforting to know that I always can count on him to have my back.
She called me from time to time. I really didn't think I needed any help.
It took me from being really depressed to feeling like somebody cared to give me some hope. Just that one text.
Be there. Your call, your presence, your words, your support. Be there and help save a life. Learn more about preventing suicide at veteranscrisisline.net.
We're building a radio station that is unique and different.
I like the news. I like being informed.
Stay with us at 98.5 FM, 1040 AM, and 95.7 FM KPPF. And hear the power of information.
Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. Hey, listen, you listeners are quite familiar with the concept of a challenge coin. For years, both members of the military and law enforcement community have encouraged me to get one to present on behalf of American Warrior Radio. When the time came, I chose the good folks at Boss Custom Coins to mint ours. The process was easy. I visited BossCoins.com, chose from a wide selection of motif options, and their designers helped me finalize the coin. We went from concept to in my pocket in just 2 weeks. If you need a challenge coin or need to renew your existing coin order, send me an email, bbg@AmericanWarriorRadio.com. I will personally put you in touch with one of the bosses at BossCoins.com for a special American Warrior Radio discount. I love our new Boss Coins. The people I give them to love our new Boss Challenge Coins. You'll love yours too. Get started at BossCoins.com and don't forget to ask me about your American Warrior Radio discount. We're talking OSI with Lieutenant Colonel John Hoffman and movies, sir. We're going to get into that because I don't know where I came across this story. If I know PA didn't send it to me. I just was surfing the interwebs and I came across it and I thought, this is just such a cool story to tell. So let's set the scene. The Mescal movie site is located just outside Benson, Arizona, kind of in the middle of nowhere, but beautiful country. It was built in 1968 for the movie Monty Walsh. For many years, it was the ancillary or the complementary filming site for the world-famous old Tucson studios. I think there's like 80 films associated with the Mescal site, one of which was the Kurt Russell version of Tombstone. So you're a reservist. You travel all around the country. You just happen to be at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base in Tucson, Arizona, and you and your wife decide to head to the real Tombstone and take the story from there.
Yeah, so the first weekend I was here, my wife came down to visit, and we went down to Tombstone and took in the sights and the shows. And we went to a show at the Gunfight Palace in Tombstone. And in there, there's basically a bar scene, and they recreate a number of famous gunfights that occurred. And while I was watching the show, it got me kind of thinking, like, wouldn't it be interesting to do crime scene training in a set like this that would kind of add a kind of a local historical flair to some training, but then also provide a kind of a different venue. Normally, when we do this in OSI, we'll use a house on base or a dorm room or something that's on base, and they become very cookie cutter and generic. And I thought that using one of these sets would make it more interesting for the agents, but then, like I said, kind of tie in the local history.
And so what interesting idea, but it is the Air Force after all. You're very creative and thinking outside the box. What was the reaction you first got from the higher-ups when you said, hey, I want to do a training session at an old Western movie site using original, authentic props and fake blood?
I'll have to say that the reaction from the higher-ups, as you call them, was very positive. They all found it to be a very good idea, very creative, and what an interesting way to provide some good training for our agents.
Mescal wasn't your last choice, but you had a couple of steps in between there, right? Where did you start with, once you got the go ahead to do this, you're a logistics guy. How long did it take to go from idea to we're actually on the ground doing the training?
Idea to training was about a month and a half, so it actually went pretty quickly. My initial thought was just to try to use the Gunfight Palace. So I took a business card that day and I ended up calling the owner, Doc, mm-hmm. and had a conversation with him and to see what he thought and if he could support us. He said due to insurance reasons or what have you, he said he couldn't support us, but he directed me towards Gammon's Gulch to maybe go check out that set and see if that would work for us. A few weeks had passed. I made the phone call to the owner there. We set up a time to go out there and look at the site. We went out there and looked at it, and it was very interesting. It's a great site, but it had some limitations because many of the buildings, the rooms had furniture and items in it that were already pre-staged. And for us, if we wanted to create a crime scene, we might have to put out fake blood or move some stuff around, and so that site didn't really look like it was going to pan out. But the owner there was nice enough to provide us information for the Mescal movie set, and so we left Gammon's Gulch. I called the person immediately, and they actually were out at the set, and we were able to go out there immediately and go look at it, and basically walk right where Kurt Russell walked during the movie Tombstone, and take a look at the site. So.
And it's really, for folks that aren't familiar with it, it's a pretty extensive site. I mean, it's not just a one or two buildings. It's got exterior and interiors, and it's quite the expansive, when it comes to Western movie, Western towns. But I know OSI folks are pretty darn sharp, but you are now becoming a movie producer. You're already talking about set placement and decoration and all this stuff. Did you do a casting call when you decided to go ahead and, I would imagine if I was a defender or an offside agent, I would want to be all over this.
Not necessarily a casting call, but my thought process here was to not just train the agents that are in my unit. There's another OSI unit on Davis-Monthan. I had invited them. We invited the security forces investigators to join us. We invited the legal office,
The JAG.
Yeah, the JAG came along. And then we also, because it's out in the middle of nowhere and there could be snakes or whatever out there at the set, we also included a medic from the medical group just in case we needed that. And then we invited PA to help us out with photos. So.
Yeah, and it's been a while since I've been out there, but last time I was there, as I recall, they don't even have restrooms. I mean, you've got to bring in your own facilities. So maybe it's gotten better.
They had porta potties at the time.
Okay, well.
But that was about the extent of it. They did have electricity, and they actually do have Wi-Fi out there. But it was pretty austere at the time. Now, I understand over the summer they've been making a lot of improvements, and I think things are probably... Each time I went out there, it seemed to be in better shape than it was the last time. So they're making a lot of improvements out there to try to open that up to the public to come and see the movie set.
And some of your, and I'll continue to go with this because I like it, some of your cast members had not read the script. So, and that's just kind of interesting for my generations. I mean, who hasn't? I could quote the movie verbatim.
Sure.
But some of the younger people had never seen the film. So that was kind of a requisite first part of the investigation or the prep, right?
Yeah, a little bit. So OSI has forensic science consultants. So they are agents that OSI trains basically to, I think, doctorate level forensic science. And they actually are up in Denver at the 12th Field Investigative Squadron. And when I called them with the idea, they were really excited because of the unique venue. But the flight chief there clearly was born well after the movie was released. And she had said that her staff had never, most of them had never even seen the movie. And so they had to do basically a viewing party to have all the forensic scientists basically sit there and watch the movie to see what exactly I was talking about. And that's how they ended up picking the scenes that they wanted to recreate.
Well, let's talk about that. So you basically reinvestigated the murders of Town Marshal Fred White, which that actually took place on October 28th, 1880, and Morgan Earp, one of the Earp brothers, that took place on March 18th, 82. Why did you choose those two? I mean, there was a lot of gunplay going on in Tombstone back then. You probably had a lot of stuff to choose from. Why did you pick those two?
Well, some of it was really kind of dictated by the venue. Some of the buildings were in disrepair, and so to maybe use a certain building, it might not have been safe necessarily because they still had to fix them up. So we basically used what was the Crystal Palace for the movie, and then right outside of that building is the corner where the Sheriff White was shot in the movie. Mm-hmm. In the Crystal Palace building, they had the pool table there. The folks at the movie set were really great about kind of recreating the bar area and putting on some tables with cards and poker, faro tables, that kind of stuff, to really recreate the scene inside there. And then the street scene was just to kind of, you have a outdoor scene for the agents to process, and then, just something different that instead of always being inside a building, because, crime happens outside too.
Sure, sure. Well, and this, I just think this is such a fun story. There's a lot of fun around this story, but at the end of the day, it's serious business. When we come back, we'll talk more with Lieutenant Colonel John Hoffman about the purpose of this training and what some of his airmen got out of it. Stick around.
This is Ben Bueller Garcia, host of American Warrior Radio. If you're Medicare eligible and military connected, Rich Lewis and Medicare Mentors will guide you through setting up coverage and making sure you have the right options. You don't have to navigate the Medicare maze alone. Call Medicare Mentors now for your free consultation and free service. Call 719-886-3377. That's 719-886-3377. Medicare Mentors, personal guidance, no cost consultation, proud sponsors of American Warrior Radio, Saturdays at noon on KPPF, Colorado Springs.
It's been called shell shock, war neurosis, and battle fatigue. Today, we call it post-traumatic stress disorder, and it affects one out of every five warriors returning from battle in Iraq and Afghanistan. The Wounded Warrior Project offers comfort and support for warriors with PTSD and all other scars of war, whether those scars are visible or hidden. Find out how to help, because for warriors, the greatest casualty is being forgotten. Please visit WoundedWarriorProject.org.
Flag season is coming up. Like me, you want to fly the best flag to show your pride. That's why our house proudly flies a flag from Allegiance Flag Supply. American flags should be made in America, and Allegiance uses only the highest quality U.S. source materials sewn right here in the USA. Order your new flag for Memorial Day, Flag Day, and 4th of July today by visiting showallegiance.com. Use discount code AmericanWarrior at checkout for a 10% discount. The gold standard of flags for serious Patriots. It's what we fly. ShowAllegiance.com.
National Guard and Reserve members need their employers' support, both on duty and in the workplace. But where can employers go when they need advice? Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve, ESGR, is here for you. We help businesses recruit, hire, and support service member employees. It's good for America and good for your workforce. Find your local ESGR representative at esgr.mil.
Hi, this is Craig Morgan. During this crisis, homeless veterans are alone, often sleeping on nothing more than a piece of cardboard. We need to act now. You have the power to move them from cardboard to headboard. Every dollar donated to Veterans Matters moves a homeless hero from the streets into their own home. To help, visit cardboardtoheadboard.org. They are not alone. They have you.
We're standing at attention for our veterans, first responders, teachers, doctors, and nurses. We salute you for all you do.
I just want to thank you for doing what you're doing.
KPPF, the power of community.
Welcome back to American Warrior Radio, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. We're joined by Lieutenant Colonel John Hoffman. We're actually fortunate to have the Lieutenant Colonel in the studio. We don't get to do that very much anymore, but I think it's more fun this way.
Sure.
Okay. Well, what are you going to say? You're the guest. But this idea, again, Colonel, that you came up with, dreamed up of a special training opportunity for your airmen, for OSI members, the Defenders, which is the security forces, and then the JAG and several others. Very creative. And, you know, so often I think with young people, well, let's take this down level, you know, particularly elementary school, much younger than the Air Force, but you need to make it exciting and interesting to get them engaged, to want to learn.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, thinking of going out there and walking in the dust and, you know, hearing my own boots on the boardwalk and going into the Crystal Palace where, you know, Morgan Earp was shot, well, the scene where Morgan Earp was shot, not the actual location, had to be pretty cool and exciting. But at the end of the day, there's a purpose to all of this. So what was the practical plan? What types of things would they be learning, would they be training on in this, what you call it, lights, camera, training movie?
So basically it's your crime scene investigations, your CSI type of activities. So when you're processing a crime scene, you're trying to basically document what you have there in a way that would be presentable in court to be able to support a charge that a person is being prosecuted for. So as you can imagine, to do that, you have to first, you know, kind of scan the scene, look at what you have, identify what types of evidence you want to collect. You know, so if it's a shooting scene, we might be looking for bullets or shell casings. And things like that. You might be able to determine trajectory, things like that at a scene. And once you've identified what you want to collect, then you need to document it. So the agents and the investigators were basically drawing sketches of the scene that they had. They were photographing the scene like they would at a crime scene where you have, you know, your overall, your kind of a mid-level, and then your close-up view with scale. And then collecting the evidence and packaging it up properly.
And what kind of experts did you rely on to make this as historically accurate as possible? I mean, Sheriff White was shot once. I think he was gut shot, if I'm not mistaken. A cadaver present, or, I mean, a movie dummy with the fake blood and stuff?
What we ended up doing is the fire department has Rescue Randys, or these okay. dummies that they use for their training. But we, the forensic science consultants, actually went to Goodwill and bought clothing that kind of matched they saw in the movie. So they dressed up the dummy as Fred White and Morgan Earp, and then they used fake blood to, you know, do some blood spatter on the ground, on their clothes. As far as like gunshots through windows and things like that, we had to rely on a Sharpie to draw that on the glass because we didn't want to break the glass. But basically, we tried to recreate that the best that we can. And then Mark out there at the movie set was really great because the Mezcal movie set provided a lot of props and things. They provided a replica, you know, six gun for a prop there to use in the scene. And so, yeah, that's how we went about doing it.
Will there be a sequel?
Well, that's a good question, and really that's going to come down.
Well, first, where can I get the DVD? Can I stream it on YouTube or anything?
Yep, none of that.
No? Okay.
Can't do any of that. Yeah, really, if it happens again, it's really going to be up to the, you know, the next commander or if the detachment here wants to do it. I think that the movie set, they were very helpful and welcoming, and I think it's a unique venue that could be used for any number of things. You know, it could be medical treatment. It could be, you know, how to do a search through an urban environment. There's a lot of opportunity there. It's really up to the creativity of the person who's running training.
What kind of feedback did you get from the airmen?
The agent loved it.
Okay.
Because it was unique, you know, after we were done with the training, we all went down to Tombstone and had lunch. So we tied it together with the actual Tombstone. And I can tell you for myself, like now that when I watch the movie, I can't help but be like, hey, I was in that room, or I recognize that. You know, it changes. I guess it really changes how you watch a movie if you've walked the same spaces that it was shot in.
Sure. So I've got a recommendation. There's a fellow by the name of Peter Schirico. He's actually an Air Force veteran, a Vietnam era veteran. I do regular features on veteran entrepreneurs, and he's established a business now where he is the foremost Western expert to the entire film industry. He can provide guns, horses, people to ride them, costumes. He's got a site out there in California. This guy did everything soup to nuts. He can do it. He was selected as the expert for the Kurt Russell version of Tombstone. Okay. He was the armorer on that movie. And then he also played Texas Jack Vermillion, the character in the film, who was a real guy.
All right.
And just a really fascinating guy. And we don't have enough time to get into it, but he tells just an amazing story of Val Kilmer, who's apparently a consummate perfectionist. And he was doing some things wrong with a six shooter, and Peter corrected him. And that didn't go over very well until he broke the gun, and Peter's like, okay, you're going to pay for that. But anyway, so what a great idea. I offered to enlist to become an OSI agent, and the PA officer here shook his head adamantly no. But what makes a great OSI agent, and how do folks who either aren't in the military right now or who might already be in the Air Force and are thinking of changing their discipline, how would they go? What's the best steps to go about that?
Well, there's multiple paths to becoming an agent. Civilian agents can be hired off the street. Generally, you need a four-year degree, or you need to be good moral character, good integrity. You need to have the ability to talk to people and socialize with people, be a good critical thinker and problem solver, because that's really what criminal investigations are. You're trying to solve a problem and get to the truth. For our enlisted and our officer agents, there's a couple different ways. All of our enlisted agents come from a previous career field, so they have to enlist in the Air Force, do some other job for their first term, basically, and then they can be recruited into OSI.
And what's the rationale behind that?
Well, I think it makes agents well-rounded because they have the background and they have experienced what the people that they might be interviewing have experienced. And it also gives them a good opportunity to understand and learn how big Air Force works before you go into a specialized unit.
You mentioned civilian agents. I didn't know there was such a thing. You have agents that are not in the Air Force.
Correct. They're Department of the Air Force civilian.
Civilian employees. Yep. Okay. Yep. All right. Obviously, everybody has to pass a background check and be able to get security, top secret clearance.
Yes.
Looking back, it sounds like you're pretty happy with that career choice. You'd recommend this to some young person out there?
Absolutely. This has been a great opportunity, a great experience for me, especially as a reservist, because being an IMA has given me a lot of flexibility in how I do my time. But as you can see by my bio, there's always opportunities. There's always things that they need someone to do. And when I can fit it in with my family and my civilian job, I raise my hand and I go serve. And then when I'm done, I go back home and pick up my civilian job and back with my family. And it's really given my family and my sons an opportunity to travel the country and live in different parts of the country throughout all these tours. For them, I think they've benefited a great deal because they've gotten to go live in Phoenix for four mm-hmm. months, or go spend time here in Tucson or in Georgia or Alabama or all these different places. So,
well, we've got stations around the country, so don't forget California and Sacramento and Colorado Springs and wherever you're listening, folks.
Yes,
so a great
absolutely.
Story. Sir, I really appreciate your time and thank you for your creativity in coming up with this in the first place. And I hope that wherever you end up or whoever follows you, we just happen to have an opportunity here with the Western Movie Sites, but there's probably lots of other historic places around the country that some of your fellow OSI dispatching commanders can take some lessons from.
Yeah, absolutely. It's great to be here, and thank you for the opportunity.
Ladies and gentlemen, you can hear this podcast and over 300 others at AmericanWarriorRadio.com. Don't forget to find us on your favorite streaming platform. We're on Apple, we're on Google, we're on Pandora, we're on Spotify, we're on TuneIn. I forget, we're just everywhere. The important thing to learn, though, is to listen to these messages and please share them with other folks out there who need to hear it. If you'd like to support what we do, visit Patreon.com, patreon.com/AmericanWarriorRadio. You can kick in a little bit of money to help us expand. Until next time, ladies and gentlemen, all policies and procedures are to remain in place. Take care.
You've been listening to American Warrior Radio. You can hear over 150 episodes of this program at AmericanWarriorRadio.com.